David was one of the greatest kings of all time. Under him, the nation of Israel, the landmass, was expanded from 6,000 square miles to over 60,000 square miles. They set up trade routes. He subdued the Philistines as a mighty warrior. He set up Israel to be a premier nation in the land. He was a national statesman and a psalmist. But quite a lot happened to him before he became king. As the youngest of eight boys, he was relegated to the lowly duties. He was the shepherd. He was the one forgotten about, while his brothers sought the more glorified positions of being warriors in Saul's army. After killing Goliath, he had a little bit of his own glory, but that again was short-lived, as Saul became threatened with in his own mind, with David. And so he then sought to kill David. And he pursued him for most of the rest of his life, the rest of Saul's life. During that time, David lived in caves. He lived with the enemies. He spent all those years wandering, and he continued to undergo trials and tribulations before he eventually became a king. Today, I'd like to go over some of those events in more detail. The events in the sheep to throne years, have a detailed look at how God prepared David as a king, and apply that to us today, and see how God is preparing us now to become kings in his soon coming kingdom. The first point I'd like to make is that God prepares in unexpected ways. David was the youngest of eight. He was the least of his brothers. He was the one that had all the other menial duties in a land, in a time where it meant the most to be firstborn. Those were the ones who got the first chance at having the birthright. Even when Samuel came into town, God told him, go into Jesse, and I want you to anoint one of his sons. So what do? They start with the first and with the oldest. And then they go to the second one. Then they go to the third one. And they did this for all seven. And it's like, well, it's not one of these. Do you have any others? Of course, we know it was David, but David was not even there. Jesse didn't even think of him highly enough to bring him with us. He was out with the sheep. He was a shepherd. He was learning to take care of the flock like he would later do as a king to the nation of Israel and as he will do, as we heard yesterday, in the world tomorrow. He was a protector of the flock. He learned to use the sling. He grew to be brave, courageous, fearless in God. He was a musician. As a musician, this opened doors. Have a look at 1 Samuel 16, verse 18. We'll read part of that and verse 23. 1 Samuel 16, 18 and 23. Go ahead and keep your place in 1 Samuel because we'll be quoting quite a few scriptures from there. Verse 18, then answered one of the servants and said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite that is cunning in playing. Verse 23, and it came to pass when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took a harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. I mean, that's absolutely amazing to me that you can play that well to actually make a demon depart from a tormented, troubled soul. Yet David learned that as a shepherd out in the field. He played music. Little did he know that this would be a method that God would use to introduce him to Saul's court. These things are not what we think of when we think of king material. We don't think of the least of the brothers. We do not think of him being a shepherd. You know, who would pick a shepherd to be the greatest king ever in the Bible? But because because God was the one doing the choosing, he did become that way. We may look at our own lives right now and think that, okay, I'm not really doing things that are that important. This is meaningless, whatever it is that you're doing. But I just have to, encourage you not to think that way. Have a look at Philippians 4:11. Brethren, we can take heart that God is working with us at the moment, and that He has a plan for whatever we are doing. And He can take whatever that is that He's planning, and He can turn it into something. Right now, we need to be happy with whatever that is. In Philippians 4:11, it says, "Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content." So what is it that we're using? What is it that we're doing now? How will God use it? I don't know, but we cannot say that it's not profitable, and I wouldn't. But whatever it is that we are doing, we need to be faithful in it, as was mentioned again yesterday. Luke 16:10, we won't turn there, I'll just quote part of it. It just says, "He that is faithful in little will be faithful in much." So we need to practice now being faithful in what God is doing with us. And whatever that is, don't look back. Once you put your hand to the plow, you can't look back. But rather, like Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, you need to do it with all your might. So be diligent in all areas of your life, because God prepares us in unexpected ways, ways that we would not expect, because His ways are not our ways. The second point, God prepares us through trials. And boy, I'm sure that, after talking with a lot of you, you know that He is preparing us, because we are going through a lot of trials. And I look around, and you always see Satan rear his really ugly head around this time of the year, around Atonement, around the Feast of Tabernacles. But he wasn't too bad this year, and I think that's because he's been concentrating on each and every one of us. But God will definitely use trials to prepare us. He'll do whatever is necessary to develop us and to humble us. David's glory was short-lived. He had his moment, quick moment of fame with Goliath. He was in a prestigious position, as I mentioned before, in Saul's court. But that was very short-lived. Saul demoted him when he became threatened. He lost his position in Saul's court. If you look right there in 1 Samuel 18:13, it says, "Therefore Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000. Which was a demotion, even though a captain of 1,000 was, again, a prestigious position. And David went out and came in before the people. But then he lost that position in the army. Then he lost his wife, Michal. When Saul tried to kill him, Michal helped him escape. And he left her behind. Then he lost his confidant, Samuel, who he relied on when Samuel died. And then he lost his friend, Jonathan. If you look at 1 Samuel 20, verse 17, you'll see the depth of their relationship and what it would mean to lose somebody. That it says, "Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul." These two had an incredible bond, and that was taken away from David. David even lost his self-respect if you look at 1 Samuel 21:13. 1 Samuel 21:13, as he was, again, always trying to get away from Saul, he sought refuge with Achish. And it says right there in verse 13, he got so afraid when he was there with the enemy that he changed his behavior before them, and he feigned madness. And he scribbled on the doors of the gate, and he let spittle fall down his beard. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown just said, no wonder Achish supposed him to be insane. Such an indignity, the things that he did. So we see everything was slowly but surely being removed from David, bit by bit by bit. God removed him from the army, removed his wife, removed Samuel, removed his friend, and finally, his self-respect. Have a look at Psalms 142, a psalm that David wrote that shows the effect of these trials, what they had upon him. see if you can get a feel for just how much David was going through. We'll read verses 1 through 7, Psalm 142. This was a prayer when he was in the cave, and also, again, being pursued by Saul. He said, I cried unto the Lord with my voice. With my voice unto the Lord did I make supplication. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path. In the way wherein I walked have they privily laid a snare for me. Verse 4. I looked on my right hand and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed. My refuge and my portion in the land of the living. Attend unto my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. Bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise your name. The righteous shall compass me about, for you shall deal bountifully with me. David, after all these trials, was beaten down so far that the only place he could look was up, to look to God. And that is where David did turn his eyes, and kept his eyes on him. When God takes away all these things, he then can reroute your life, and he can start it anew. Have a look at Acts 14:22. Acts 14 and verse 22. We find out that trials are indeed very necessary. Acts 14:22, confirming the souls of the disciples and exhorting them to continue in the faith, and that we must, through much tribulation, enter into the kingdom of God. It's a must. It is not going to be a doubt that we are going to go through trials, and it's a necessary thing for us to get into the kingdom. So we must beware that we do not lean on anything too heavily, or else God will be forced to knock it out, because there are no crutches that we can rely on except for God. That is our true support, and that's the only thing that's going to last, and that is what God's going to use. Next point. God prepares us slowly but surely. Character cannot be hurried. As Mr. Armstrong used to say, it's not created by fiat. From the anointing, from when David was anointed by Samuel to be king until the time that he actually got on the throne was somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 13 years. That's amazing that, you know, here he is. Okay, you're king, but now, wait. You know, here he was, you know, being pursued by Saul the whole time. He knew he was king, but God had some preparation to do. Let's take a quick look at how God used Saul, David's thorn in the flesh, to shape David. He used him for most of those years, and most of it was under the threat of death. And we could see, you know, the effects of the threat of death under Psalms 142, where we look back and he was crying to God. But in 1 Samuel 18, verses 10 to 12, there he was in Saul's court, you know, with Saul. He was already anointed as, you know, to be the next king of Israel by this time. And he was there with somebody who really didn't deserve to be there, especially somebody over him. In verse 10 it says, it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David played with his hand, as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand. Now Saul was head and shoulders above the rest of the people in terms of size. He was a warrior, and here he had a javelin. And David's over there minding his own business, playing the harp. Verse 11, Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even unto the wall. Even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. So I'm not sure that I'd actually gone back after the first time. But David did. David was a warrior in his own right. I guess he thought he could, you know, either he thought God was that with him or he thought he was that good. Verse 12, and Saul was afraid of David because of the Lord was with him, and he departed from Saul. And we look just a chapter later in 1 Samuel 19, 9 and 10. Same thing. The evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul as he sat in the house with his javelin in his hand. Kind of makes me wonder how many other people he pinned to the wall if he always had it in his hand. And David played with his hand. And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence. And he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. So from the very beginning, Saul is, you know, it's evident. He wants to kill David. He's threatened by David. Later, David had to flee from the castle with the help of Michal. Michal helped him escape and, you know, pulled a fast one on her own dad. And for whatever reason, it's not totally clear, but he left Michal behind. And again, that had to be somewhat hard to do because Michal was not Saul's first choice for David. David preferred Michal. And so it wasn't like it was necessarily just an arranged marriage. It was, you know, he loved Michal to obviously a certain degree. But he left her behind. Saul, with superior numbers, pursued David on many occasions. He pursued David while he was at Ziph. Saul then pursued him while he was at, I think the correct pronunciation is Elah or something like that. And then finally, when David was at Gath, you know, Saul, I think, probably felt, or he thought better than to pursue him there in the land of the giants. But why did God allow Saul to do this to David? And it was God that did allow him. Look at Revelation 3:18. And we see what God is doing, and this is directed at the Laodiceans, but it's no doubt appropriate to look at it in terms of each and every one of our lives. But just read the first portion of the sentence. Revelation 3:18 says, I counsel you to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that you may be rich. That is why God turns up the heat. He wants to burn off all the dross, all the slag, and he wants us to come out to be as pure and pristine of gold as possible. Look at Romans 5:3. Find another reason for all these trials that we have. Why they're necessary. Another reason, Romans 5:3 says, and not only so, but we glory in tribulations, also knowing that tribulation, or trials, works patience. Brethren, Rome was not built in a day, and neither will our character. As a side note, when we have trials, God provides a way out. As you know, David survived. He survived all that Saul had to throw at him. He was not, you know, really happy about it all the time. He was depressed. He thought that his life would end. He gave up sometimes, and he had his low points. But he did survive. Have a look at 1 Samuel 19, 1 through 2. We'll look at a couple ways that, just a couple, that God provided a way out for David. They come in different forms. This one was in verse 1. Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants that they should kill David. So Saul is telling his plans to Jonathan, who, by the way, you know, loved David and David loved him in a brotherly way. Verse 2. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeks to kill you. Now, therefore, I pray you, take heed to yourself in the morning and abide in a secret place and hide yourself. So here we have one messenger. You know, he alerted David to the fact David, again, was not killed. 1 Samuel 23, verse 14. And David abode in the wilderness in strongholds and remained in the mountain in the wilderness of Ziph, where Saul was pursuing him, as it says, and Saul sought him every day. But God delivered him not into his hand. Those are just a couple examples. You know, we got 10 to 13 years of trials and tribulations for David, and he survived, and God provided a way out. We too can be confident. Have a look at 1 Corinthians 10:13. 1 Corinthians 10:13. I can just read it to you. It says, "There has no temptation taken you, but such as common to man." So these are all, you know, trials that everybody goes through. "But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above what you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear." So we can take comfort knowing that when God does give us trials, there will be a way out, and it's not going to be the end of the world. We will be able to bear it. Next point. God helps us prepare by giving us the tools for the job. God helps us prepare by giving us the tools for the job. Look at 1 Samuel 17:40. 1 Samuel 17:40. And we see that David, he took his staff in his hand, and he chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, and then he put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine being Goliath. Without knowing it, David probably had been preparing for that moment for more than 10 years. No doubt, as a child in the field, he grabbed his sling, and he was practicing. And he was throwing it at bears and lions and other things that didn't attack. But God was preparing him for this moment, because that already made the moment appear, and he had the tools to do the job. Also, David did his part. He walked up there to Goliath with a sling and with 5 smooth stones. Brethren, we are to trust in God, especially in overwhelming situations when we face our Goliath. But we need to do our part. And I remember Mr. Armstrong used to say, "Rely on God, but work as though it all depended on you." Brethren, now we have the tools. We have a lot of the tools that God has made available to us now as we are potential sons of God. And those are found in Ephesians 6, and I'm not going to go through them in depth. I'll just mention that we have the belt of truth, the helmet of salvation, the shield of faith, shoes to preach the gospel, a breastplate of righteousness, and the sword of the Spirit. This is the armor that God provides because we wrestle against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. If we need more than that, we can rest assured that God will provide. Next point. God helps us to become kings by doing His part. We must let Him do that. We can't get confused His part and our part. Have a look at 1 Samuel 24, 1 through 7. 1 Samuel 24, verses 1 through 7. We'll see an instance here of David allowing God to do his own part. I think we're familiar with this story. "It came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines that it was told him, saying, 'Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi.' Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. And he came to the sheepcotes by the way, where there was a cave. And Saul went in to cover his feet." Now, exactly what "cover his feet" means is, I guess, somewhat disputed. Some think he went in there to use the bathroom. But it seems more likely that he went in there to have like a midday nap and get out of the sun. And they used to just pull their robes or whatever down over their feet, tuck it, and so that, you know, they didn't get any cool breezes or anything. So, which may lend more credence to the story as well, as we'll see down here at the end. And it says, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. And the men, of David said unto him, behold, the day of which the Lord said unto you, behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it shall seem good to you. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privily. Now, you're in a situation where Saul, you know, David talked to God all the time. And God answered him all the time. And so all of a sudden now you have a situation where you're in there's all these caves, and Saul comes into your cave. And there's an ancient Jewish legend that God actually had a spider spin a web over the front of the cave. And then that way Saul knew, quote unquote, that nobody was actually in that cave, because obviously the web would be gone had somebody gone in. But again, that's just Jewish tradition. But Saul went into this cave where David was with his men. And you got to think, man, this is an absolute prime moment. This is the one. And they were right. You know, they're saying, David, this is it. This is the time that God has, you know, set aside for you to become king, and Saul no longer to be the evil king that he is. David, again, found it hard to lift his hand up against God's anointed, so all he did was cut off part of the robe while he, you know, slept, as, you know, which kind of seems more obvious that he was asleep, because you would think it'd be kind of hard to sneak up on somebody and cut off their robe while they were actually awake and, you know, maybe looking around or whatever. So in verse 5 it said, it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words, and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. So, and we remember the story that he goes out and confronts Saul later with it. But the fact remains was that David did not take the matter into his own hand. Again, he passed the test in 1 Samuel 26, 8 through 11, where he and Abishai went down as Saul and his army slept. And have a look at that. First Samuel 26, verse 8 through 11. I'll just read. Then said Abishai to David, God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Again, same exact scenario. Again, he's being tested. Now therefore, let me smite him that I pray you with the spear, even to the earth at once, and I will not smite him the second time. I'm gonna do it right. And David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? Now, verse 10, David said, furthermore, as the Lord lives, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish, which is what eventually happened. Verse 11, the Lord forbid that I should stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed, but I pray you, take you now the spear that is at his bolster in the cruse of water. So he took it, just, you know, showing him that he was there and that he did not kill him, because he later again confronted him. Brethren, Romans 12, verses 17 through 19 says, recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. Verse 18, if it be possible, as much as lies in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Now we can't get it confused that David went around and he did kill a lot of people, but that was at God's direction. God was the one. We don't have the right to take anybody's life, because God is working in ways that we don't know, with whom we don't know. Next point. God prepares us in this world If we were to be taken out of this world, how would we build character? You want to see a real testing ground? Let's have a look back at that, at 1 Samuel 27, 1 through 3. We'll see something that David had to do in terms of how bad he had it in terms of living in the world, what he had to deal with. First Samuel 27, 1 through 3. David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. Again, he's quite depressed. There is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines, the mortal sworn enemy of the Israelites. And Saul shall despair of me to seek me any more in the coast of Israel. And he was right about that. So shall I escape out of his hand. And David arose, and he passed over with 600 men that were with him unto Achish, the son of Maoch, king of Gath. And David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, even David with his two wives. Now, things of note here are that he was with Achish. Achish was the guy that he feigned madness in front of. He was so afraid. I have no idea about Achish, but Goliath was from Gath. Gath was known for its giant. Israel chose a man who was head and shoulders above them. That was who they chose as their king, who they perceived to be the big, the strong, the tall, dark, and handsome. I can't see that the Philistines would have done too much different. So here we are among the, in a land of giants. You have Achish, who he goes up in front of, and this is the man who he was very afraid of, so much so that he pretended like he was insane. This is where David sought refuge. This is where he went to escape from Saul. He was living with the enemy. Brethren, we are now living with the enemy, each and every one of you. Our enemies now are self, Satan, and society. Self, Satan, and society. We, as self, can be our own worst enemies. I think we know that. We know that the battle is right here between the temples. That's where we fight all of our battles for the most part. We have to decide to do right and to not do wrong. Satan, that should go without saying, he is our enemy. He's the one that is tormenting us day and night, seeking, you know, going around the earth seeking whom he may devour. Society, they are our enemy as well. They don't mean to be that way, but carnality gets the best of them. We live in this world. The people in this world are not the, you know, they are carnal. They're sold to sin. They are the ones who are putting out all the trash that's around us that we have to deal with day in and day out. Philippians 2:15 says, that you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. Brethren, we are to be light in this world. We are to be as a light on a hill that is not hid. Revelation 18:4 also says, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins and receive not the plagues. Even though we are in the world, we are not to be part of it. And while we are here, we are to continue about our Father's business. Of course, that comes from the saying when Christ was, you know, 12 years old and on the way to the feast, he stopped back and his mom wondered, where were you? And he said, you know, do you know I would be about my Father's business? That is what we are to be doing. I'd like to show you just a quick example of how David did that. 1 Samuel 16:19, we'll start there. 1 Samuel 16:19. Realize up in verse 13 he was anointed. He was anointed king of Israel. He was anointed king of Israel. in verse 13. Verse 19, I think this one statement right here says so much about David's character. It says who the man is, what he was about. Wherefore Saul sent messengers unto Jesse and said, send me David, your son, which is with the sheep. After being anointed, after being called out, as it were, having all this potential to be a king of Israel, or for us to be a son of God, the first thing that David went back to was his father's business. He went back and he was tending the sheep. Now that is to me as somebody who did not have a high impression of himself. He did not let the fame go to his head, as it were. And then again, we look back in 1 Samuel 17:15. After he had been off with Saul, what's the first thing he does when what does he do here? It says, but David went and returned from Saul, this position, this high position that he had in the land, to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And you look just verse 16 to 18, you see that he was still serving his fathers and brothers. In verse 16 it says, and the Philistines drew near in the morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. That was Goliath. And Jesse said unto David, his son, take now to your brethren an ephah of this parched corn and 10 loaves and run to the camp to your brethren. So while his brothers were in Saul's army and seeking these positions of glory, David was still back at home holding down the fort. And he said, and carry 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how your brethren fare, and take their pledge. He did not let it go to his head, brethren. And we too, no matter what we think we're going to be, what we think we're going to become, as we look forward to being kings in God's soon coming kingdom, we need to keep doing what we're supposed to be doing. Just because we have that special calling of God doesn't mean that we can sit back and wait for everything to be handed to us. We are to be about our Father's business and realize that God is watching us even when no one else is. Just as David had many journeys, we each have our own to take. And it's not so much where we're going on this earth, but it's how we get there. We're in training now. God is slowly but surely preparing us in ways that we may not even know, through trials that may go on and on. But if we do our part, he will do his, and in the end we can look forward to being with him in his soon coming kingdom.